Now then, the cool scientist, Sean Duke, good morning.
Hi, Declan.
Good morning. Lots of foodie items today. There you go. Must be a food slot on the science.
Yeah, food science.
But what's this one that says a boring diet could be actually bad for you? What do you mean by boring? Is it one you're fed up with?
I think what they mean really is a boring diet is that you're eating the same kind of things every day, so you don't have a broad selection of types of things that you eat. And I know this can happen because we tend to, in Ireland, a lot of us will have our potatoes, we'll have our meat, we'll have our veg, and you can end up with a fairly narrow repertoire, if you like, of your diet. So, but the healthy diet scientists are finding is where there's one with a lot of variety. So it's not necessarily about cutting down on the volume, although if there's a huge volume, obviously you need to do that, but you need to diversify. And this is because in our gut, we have these tiny bacteria, trillions of them, living in our gut, microbes, bacteria. Doesn't sound too nice, but these guys are really important because they have to be kept in balance. And these bacteria are in better balance, if you like, to simplify it, when you have a more diverse diet. So there's a lot more of them there. Some of them are for this food, some of them are this food. They're basically breaking food down, if you like. So they found that scientists have also found as part of this research that people with a more diverse diet will have a more diverse microbiome, as they call it, which is all these bacteria in your tummy, and they'll also be slimmer and healthier. So there's a general trend there. And of course, interestingly, even though you go into the supermarket and there's this huge selection in front of you, if you look back to the days of the hunter-gatherer out roaming around, you know, our ancestors, their diet was about 20 times more diverse than ours is today, because they were literally picking up all kinds of plants, all kinds of berries, anything that they'd come across. You know, they were opportunistic, as well as meat, of course. And we don't use a lot of the varieties that are out there. Like, just one example, bananas. The bananas that we get here, they're generally 95% of them are all the same type of banana that we get, but actually there's about 1,000 banana varieties.
There's
out
not, there. Is there?
There is. Gosh. There's about 1,000 different varieties. We're just getting one, and I suppose that's true for a lot of the different fruits and veg that we're getting. Maybe one species or type that are coming in. And if you look at plants, of course we should be eating a lot more veg and plant material. We generally eat a lot of meat, myself included, too much of it maybe, and we're only consuming about 0.06% of edible plant species. So the hunter-gatherers were eating lots of plants, and it was good. It was giving them that diverse diet.
Right, so
we're not doing that.
Yeah, go out and vary your diet.
One final thing. It can also predict obesity. So, you know, if you want to predict if somebody in a child, for example, if they have a very limited diet, they're going to have a limited microbiome, they're at more risk of obesity.
Gosh, yeah. Okay, so we need a varied diet, okay, for our health as well as our enjoyment. Another food story. The stomach-churning reason you should never ask for lemon in your gin and tonic. This is in the Telegraph. You wanted to mention this.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll mention that one in a second, because the one I wanted to mention first was this sixth taste. We have a sixth taste.
Oh, yes, yes.
So many of us, actually, we crave things like carbohydrates, pasta. You might get a craving for a bag of crisps when you're sitting at home at night. And why is that? Well, up to now, we thought we had just five tastes that we could pick up: sweet, salt, sour, bitter, and this other one, which is called umami, which actually emphasizes those four. And that was it. The last one we just found a couple of years ago. So that was the five. But we thought, our scientists thought, that it was very strange that we had all of this carbohydrate in our diet, pasta, potatoes, things like that. It would be very strange, scientists thought, if we couldn't taste that. There must be a taste for it, but we just hadn't found it yet, or this was the theory. So they put that to the test anyway, and they essentially got carbohydrates, and they put them into liquid solution. So it was essentially just a pure liquid, and they threw in the carbohydrate there, so there's nothing else there. And they asked 22 people to taste it. Now, some of them were Asian and some of them were European. The Asians said that they picked up a taste which was like rice. The Europeans picked up a taste which was like bread or pasta. So there, because the only other thing that was in there was the water, which doesn't have a taste, so clearly we were able to taste it. So the thinking is that actually we can taste the carbohydrates, and that, you know, we get a bigger kick from certain types that we can break down with the saliva in our under our tongue into nice sweety flavors. But essentially, we can taste this, so it's another taste that we have to define. We haven't we haven't picked up where the receptors are, but clearly, if they're tasting the carbs, then we've got receptors there. We're going to find them. We just haven't found them yet.
Yeah, very good. Big discovery. Elderly drivers.
Yeah, I was thinking my dad, he's 77, he wouldn't like me calling him elderly, but I suppose he is elderly now. Driving, he's still a good driver, and I'm sure lots of people have parents that are good drivers, right up in 70s, 80s, etc. Of course, our society is ageing. So the big question is, right across the Western world anyway, is at what stage is it safe to continue driving or to stop driving? Well, the British have looked at this, and the statistics are interesting because they've 4.5 million people over 70 would have full driver's license, and they've got 236, according to their transport figures, that are over 100. Okay, so if you translate that into Ireland, that's about 40,000 people over 70 and about 20 people over 100 that are still driving here, more or less. So they've got health issues, obviously. You're more at risk for certain things as you get older. The reactions are slower. But should they stop driving? Well, in some parts of the world, like New South Wales, if you get to 85, you have to do a retest every year, which might seem a bit unfair. Other places think that's discrimination. So researchers at the University of Swansea looked at this, and they found that certain things that that people do over 70, on average now we're talking about, they're worse, if you like, than people under 70. But there's not a massive difference. Like, for example, 13% of the crashes that are caused are by people over 70 when they're doing a right-hand turn, as opposed to 7% of people under 70. So, okay, they're a little bit worse, people over 70, at doing right-hand turns. They're more likely to get into a crash. But it's not an enormous difference. Right. 6%. And then you can also say, look, if people are older, they know they're getting older, they're going to compensate. So it's kind of like maybe in soccer, to use a soccer analogy, the centre half who's 36 or 37, he knows he's not as fast as the centre forward.
Yeah, so he plays and sort of a sweeper,
So, you know, and then where we're going for older people is a future, which is very exciting, I think, which is happening very quickly, where we could have, there's companies like Uber, U-B-E-R, they're developing driverless electric cars. This has already started in the US, where you can literally stand on the road, press your app, a driverless electric car comes to collect you and takes you where you want to go. So you don't need to own a car, you just jump in and you tell it where to go.
Right. Instead of telling the taxi man where to go. Now, you are going to tell us that, and I mentioned it earlier on, that there's an asteroid out there and it's heading our way.
Yeah, this is like a Hollywood film, but actually there's a lot of these, what they call near-Earth asteroids. There's loads of them out there, and we are trying to detect more of them, because if you just look at the moon, for example, it's pockmarked with all these craters, and the reason is that asteroids have been hitting into it for millions of years. But unlike Earth, where these craters disappear under vegetation and trees and everything like that, they're preserved on the surface of the moon. So it gives you an idea of how many of these things have hit, and they're hitting Earth as well. They cause a lot of damage when they hit, and they don't have to be that big. In 1908, the last time there was a huge impact of one of these things, and it was about 50 meters wide. So that's big, but not enormous. It actually devastated a huge area of Siberia. It was lucky because there weren't many people there. It was just forests were flattened over a huge area. So there's one out there at the moment, and it's called QL44. NASA have identified this thing, and it's 61 meters long. It's an asteroid, and it's spinning irregularly. So it's not like a perfect little nice little circle. It's an odd shape, so it's spinning in a strange kind of way. Now, that means where it hits or doesn't hit, or where it travels to, is unpredictable because of that irregular shape. But what they're saying at the moment is it's going to whiz past Earth very close, at 31,000 miles per hour on the 17th of December. So when's that? September. But the problem is the orbit is uncertain, so there's no guarantee it's going to whiz past. It could actually impact on Earth. Let's hope it doesn't, because if it did, it's equivalent to several nuclear bombs. It could really damage somewhere. And, I mean, there is a serious thing here, because If that one doesn't hit, then there are people that are saying eventually one of these is going to hit because, you know, there's so many of them out there. We can only see about 10% of them.
Yeah.
So we need to get better at seeing them, and then we need to develop ways to deflect them away from the Earth using lasers or whatever it is, because if we don't, sooner or later, one of these is going to land on Earth, and let's hope it's not on somewhere where there's lots of people.
Exactly. God, that's frightening. Thanks for that, John. Okay. By the way, just to mention the gin and tonics and the lemon, they found in a survey in the United States that there was all sorts of little nasties nestling in your lemon in various restaurants and bars.
That must be what causes the hangover then.
Indeed. Cool Santa, Sean Duke. Thanks very much indeed, Sean. Very good. So get a varied diet, watch out for the asteroid, and you're okay driving as you get older.
And no lemon in your tonic.
Thank you very much indeed. At SeanDuke.com, you can catch up on Sean's writings on Science Spinning there. SeanDuke.com. Thanks, Sean.